The views expressed in this program are those of the individual participants and not necessarily those of WVUD or the University of Delaware.
WVUD presents Campus Voices, conversations with University of Delaware faculty, staff, and students about their teaching, research, service projects, and other interests. To introduce today's guest, here's your host, Richard Gordon.
Thank you, Jason. Today we're on location in Old College Hall, and we're visiting two of the university museums. Ivan Henderson is starting us off. Why don't you tell us about what's going on in all four of the university museums, then we'll concentrate on the two exhibits that are here in Old College.
Certainly. Well, first off, we'll start off in the Mineralogical Museum over in Penny Hall. This fall, September 3rd through December 7th, we are showing Sculpted by Nature, Silver and Copper from the Peter H. Farquhar Collection. These are specimens of silver and copper, which through natural processes have taken on some really organic looks and forms. So really quite a sight to behold and a rare opportunity for us. Also in Mechanical Hall Gallery, same dates, September 3rd through December 7th, we're featuring Renderings, which is a collection of prints made at the Brandywine Workshop in Philadelphia. Here in Old College, we're showing two exhibitions this semester. Open September 3rd through December 7th, Delaware Awake, World War I at Home and Abroad. And also opening October 2nd, we'll have Treasures and Tales, which is objects from Italy's Guardia di Finanza.
Well, before I let you go, tell me a little bit more about what's going on in Mechanical Hall, because that looks like a really interesting exhibit. It looks like it's contemporary art, mostly African-American prints, and has some very interesting features associated with it.
Renderings is, once again, a collection of prints made at the Brandywine Workshop in Philadelphia. Brandywine notoriously works with a very diverse group of artists, so a number of artists who are of African descent, but also really a good ethnic mix of people who produce their art there. All contemporary prints, most of the artists are still living, so we're dealing with some pretty contemporary issues, a lot around identity, about knowing ourselves, and sort of structuring our own narratives.
All four of the museums are open.
They're open Wednesday through Sunday, noon till 5, and on Thursdays we're open late, which will be until 8 p.m. All museums are always open for free, and all of our events are always free.
Janice Tomlinson wants you to say something about an open house.
Yes, certainly. For the first time this semester, we're offering for first Thursdays of each month an open house event, an opportunity for the community, both UD and non-UD community, to come to the galleries, learn a little bit more about what we have here every semester, and also to engage in some conversations and try to do some fun things around art. That's the first Thursday of every month, so the first will be in Mechanical Hall Gallery, October 2nd, 5:30 till 7:30 p.m. We hope to see everybody here. The following 2 months, we'll do Mineralogical and then Old College.
Thank you, Ivan. Now also joining us here in the Old College Gallery, we have Sarah Leonard, one of the graduate students in art history and the curatorial track, and Janice Tomlinson, the director of University Museums. Ladies, thank you so much.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Let's start with you, Sarah. Let's talk about Delaware Awake.
Delaware Awake is a show about the First World War that was actually a collaborative effort between several, I think, Janice, I'm going to have to leave. Was it seven of us?
Seven.
Yeah, seven graduate students. I've lost count. All bringing together works from both different collections at the university, so university museums, but also university library, university archives, the Mark Samuels Lassner Collection, which is housed at the university library, also the Delaware Art Museum and Winitor, bringing together work from all these collections to really kind of give a broad view of artistic reactions to the First World War, both kind of major works of art, but also letters, books, objects that you might not see at big World War I exhibits, but that are specific to the area, as well as objects that are from Europe, from the front lines.
Now, standing where we're standing, I see two posters, it looks like. Mm-hmm. One with a black hen on a pile of eggs.
Yes.
And one with cabbage, potatoes, and carrots.
Yes. Those are actually some of my favorite objects in here, so good eye. These posters, there's four of them in a row, and on the left we have a factory, smokestacks, and on the right a gas lamp. And these were actually made by French school children. They were designed as part of the French information organization during the war, just like in America we and in Britain and all over the areas that were involved in the war. We have what's, you know, what we call propaganda posters. And we have some examples of American ones here as well. But here in France, they actually involved school children in making these posters to bring out some of the messages about rationing, which is why we have the vegetables, and the gas lamp, trying to think about how they could be using their resources at the time. The chicken is actually my favorite. Under it, it says, Je suis un brave poule de guerre, which means I'm a brave chicken of war. And it, je mange... can't read it from over here, but it translates to I eat little but produce much, and it's sitting on this huge pile of eggs. So it's encouraging people to be keeping chickens during the war because they produce food for the people.
Well, these French propaganda posters, as you call them, are so much more subtle than the American ones, mm-hmm. which are over on the wall to my right. You know, help them. Keep your war savings pledge.
Yes, it's a very different style. It's different messages. The American ones are trying, you know, to encourage people to buy war bonds or to go to war, and really kind of making these very strong messages. Remember Belgium, which is in the middle of these three, is a very strong message about what had happened in Belgium, where Belgium was where the first battles of the war were, and Germany really kind of steamrolled Belgium. So it's this very vivid image of a woman being hauled away by a soldier. So it's very different from a message about cabbage.
And he's very clearly a German soldier. Look at that pointed point on the top of his helmet.
Yes, he has on the Pikelhaube, the pointed helmet. And it's a very different visual style as well, which is interesting that in here you can see different art styles that are being used in this moment. The French posters really reflect the poster style in that period that we associate maybe with Toulouse-Lautrec, images of the Moulin Rouge. It's that same poster inheritance. Very different kind of visual style.
To my left is perhaps the classic. I think you're using this one as the image to promote the show,
yes.
Are you not?
Yep. So even if somebody's just walking down Main Street, if you walk by Old College, you can look up and see a big reproduction of this hanging from the columns. It's called Delaware Awake, and it's an example of the poster art that was being made, and this one is specifically being made in Delaware to encourage people in Delaware to support the war effort by buying war bonds. It's this wonderful allegorical image of Delaware herself as a woman. She is wearing a blue and gold gown. She is holding peach blossoms, which are the state flower. There's a map of Delaware behind her. And down at the bottom right, we have another chicken. In this case, it is the blue hen. It is the fighting blue hen.
And over there, we've got the seal.
Yes. So it's an image all about Delaware. And it's really interesting in the history of the university, because this is actually the first piece that came into the university art gallery collection in 1918. It was given to the Delaware Women's College that became part of the university. And it is the original painting that became the poster that would have been up all over the place in Delaware to encourage the war effort.
Well, in addition to these posters and paintings that Sarah's telling us about, you've also got other things. Like right now I'm looking at, looks like about a dozen or so postcards.
Mm-hmm. They are what were pre-made postcard-sized cards that were given to soldiers at the front. In this case, this is Moholy Nagy. She's an important artist after the war. He's Czech, and he was actually fighting on the German side, and he was giving these cards to write on, to write home, but he actually was using them to draw on. Very few of these were actually sent. We do have one example where we have a reproduction where you can actually see him writing on the back of it and sending it, but mostly he's using it, he's being given these, and he's using them to create his own impressions of the war, and he actually went into the war expecting to be a lawyer and came out deciding to be an artist. So these are some of his first artistic efforts, and he made many, many of these, and we have a really strong collection of them at the University Art Museum. Not only these, but these are some of the curator Carly Wurzelbacher's favorites that she decided we should put up.
One of the things that you and Janice were telling me earlier that's remarkable about this exhibit is the amount of collaboration. You just mentioned Carly.
Yeah, so it was both people who are in the curatorial track like me who want to go into museum work, and also other people within the department who work on this era in American context and European context. I work on British context, particularly doing Victorian, but I'm also interested in this period. So it was a lot of different perspectives, but people who are interested in material objects in display and in working on these kind of museum settings.
On the other side of the wall here, we've got some of the things that you have a special fondness for. These are the things that you worked on.
Yes. In this exhibit, we have six books and periodicals, which all come from the Mark Samuels Lassner Collection, housed at the University of Delaware Library. They're really wonderful examples of the print culture in this period. Some of them are from the war itself. The periodicals are very interesting because they're being produced to raise awareness of issues during the war. This one, Reveille, that's right in front of me, is being edited by John Galsworthy. He's a very famous novelist. He wrote the Foresight Saga.
Right.
But here he's using his effort to try to raise awareness for the plights of disabled soldiers and sailors that are coming back to Britain and can't quite integrate into society. So it's kind of this wonderful thing where he's involved in the literary culture, so he's bringing in people like J.M. Barrie and Rudyard Kipling, maybe people we don't really associate with the war, along with some poets that we do associate with the war, these war poets. And the cartoonist Max Beerbohm also is contributing to these. He's contributing images of war artists. So there are these kind of wonderful little cartoons at the beginning and then various pieces of literature. And then at the end of each volume, we have essays by military men, doctors, politicians. So the beginning part, the literature, is sort of the spoonful of sugar. And then at the end is the medicine. It's this these efforts to raise awareness. And it's really fun just to come in and look at the cover and look at the list of all these famous names that are all contributing to this effort.
Now, this side is a little bit darker than the side we just were on. I mean, it looks like there are some prints and monochromatic or almost monochromatic works that look a little haunting.
Yeah, in this case, we really kind of get back into this corner that can be kind of rough to be back here because it's really artists reflecting on what happens during the war and after the war to the civilians. It's painful. It's images of skeletons. It's images of kind of refugees and people who have suffered during the war. The image of these mothers and children is actually by someone in Germany. So maybe somebody that we as Americans might think, oh, the enemy. But we're also seeing their suffering as well as our allies' suffering and kind of the reflections after the war as people are trying to process what has happened. So you do get people kind of looking forward and having these kind of dark thoughts even about what might come after, even though they're celebrating. So we have these great images of Memorial Hall being dedicated, which are, you know, it's very specific to the University of Delaware. So if people are interested in the history of the campus, we do have these images, and it is, the war is over. People are happy. There's a parade. But then we also have people creating these images where they're thinking about, you know, what's going to happen to Germany, what's going to happen next, and actually another great Beerbohm cartoon that almost seems to predict nuclear warfare. So people are really trying to process this, and they're processing it in different ways. And it's interesting just to come in here and reflect on those for a little while.
On this side, we've got President Hullion trundling off the first wheelbarrow of dirt in the building of Memorial Hall. We have a picture of Memorial Hall without all the other buildings and walkways and brickwork that we're used to seeing on campus today. And then right behind you, this has been, while you were talking, I was looking at this, and this one looked almost scary.
Yeah, it is. It's a creepy picture, and it's coming an artist that was involved during the war. It's called The Dance Macabre, The Dance of Death, but it's actually from 1935. Reflecting on what's going to happen next, and you actually have this kind of all these figures that are kind of puppets, and it's about German politics in this post-war period and looking to what's going to happen next, kind of looking forward to the fear as people start to become aware of Nazism and this really kind of sinister World War One soldier in the front in his gas mask with his bayonet watching this kind of dance of death of what's going to come after.
There's a figure on the stage who represents a Nazi, and there's Uncle Sam to the far right with his marionette strings.
Yes, they're all puppets. They're all being controlled by strings from above.
Well, this exhibit alone would be worth the trip up to Old College, but we're going to walk next door and let Janice tell us about the exhibit that's opening on the day that this episode of Campus Voices debuts. We've now entered the main gallery, and Janice Tomlinson, the director of University Museums, is with us. And the exhibit's not all the way finished yet, is it?
Well, everything's installed, but we are still adding the labels.
Tell us a little bit more about this exhibit. I mean, this is something that has come over from Italy. It's not usually shared in the United States, and it's been set up. So we've got part of the exhibit here, and part of the exhibit is in Wilmington?
At the Grand, yes, in Wilmington. This is an exceptional opportunity for both the university and for Wilmington and for Delaware. These wonderful objects in this gallery, we have objects that are made from the 8th century before the Christian era to the 2nd century Common Era, travel from the Etruscan civilization to the Roman civilization. And this is all because the Guardia di Finanza, which reports to the economic ministry in Italy, oversees the art recovery team, because in Italy, unfortunately, art theft is the third largest economic crime. And they have recovered, during the past 2 years, they have recovered almost 1 million objects. Because the fact is, there is, almost all of Italy is one large archaeological field, and many have not been explored, and people explore them, take the objects, and don't register them, and then they're considered stolen goods. In Italy, the art recovery team has done several exhibitions showing the kinds of things that it brings back to the public, to common ownership of the Italian state. And this is the first time they've brought it abroad. It was really through the collaboration of the Italian Guardia di Finanza and the International Council of Delaware that this came to both Wilmington and the University of Delaware. And we are absolutely delighted.
What's this picture you've got right up here at the very front?
You can always tell. I was laughing with some of the attendants the other day, because you can always tell what's my favorite, because I really give them good places when I install an exhibition.
This is in the front with a light right on it.
Exactly. But it is probably 7th century B.C. It is a single-handled wine jug with a very wide sort of lip and spout. But what's fascinating about it, first of all, well, most of the objects here, whether or not you want to talk ancient civilization or anything, if you love ceramics and if you love form, throughout you just see beautiful examples, whether a form like this was made today by a ceramicist or whether it was made almost 2,000 years ago. It is just beautiful. But this particular one has, on the lower part of it, it has a geometric decoration, because this was actually the end of an era called the geometric period in early Italian, specifically Etruscan art. And then around the top, something I love, are painted figures of animals. It's an animal frieze circling it. You know, for those people who have done their art history studies, this will remind them of Corinthian pottery of the 8th century. But what happens is you have a lot of influence coming from Greece into Italy at this time. And that's really what's one of the interesting factors of this, is that you have Greek influence coming to Rome, you have Italian, the indigenous population sort of absorbing it and transforming forms. So from a historical standpoint, it's also just beautiful. But this, I think, is simply lovely, and it's so beautifully preserved. You know, very little abrasion on it. You read the figures beautifully. You have no idea of restoration. It's really quite amazing. But I want to show you another one, which is dramatic. First of all, this is probably the oldest object in the exhibition. Probably, we think about 8th century. It's a very simple clay pot, baked clay, terracotta. And it has, as you can see, a light color, a slip added to give it to deepen its red color. But you see very clearly that there are holes that have been dug through that. And those are actually the evidence of someone who was looking for treasures to dig up, who used a sort of turning drill. They call it a furini, I think. I've been told in English it's an auger, but I don't know these terms, to see what was underneath the soil, and in so doing drilled holes into that precious piece.
So the antiquity thief made these holes.
Mm-hmm, exactly. They stop at nothing, because whatever they find is free to them, and they don't, you know, they just don't value these objects as they should.
Over here we have a whole lot of little things.
A whole lot of little things, yes. And you'll see that our wonderful preparator, Brian Kamen, built these small plexiglass tubes and instilled each of these small, they look like mini vases. They're very tapered at the bottom, and then they sort of bulge outwards, and then they come back into a thin neck with an opening and a lip around the top.
What were they for?
A simple handle.
Holding oil, perfumes?
Exactly. They're called unguentaria, which means unguents. Aromas, perfumes. And they were, you can see, they don't stand up. That's why we had to build these little tubes to hold them. They were actually worn on strings, and that is which could be hooked around that very thin sort of cylindrical cylinder of a neck and held in place by that wider spout and the single handle. And they were also, we tend to associate unguents and aromas, traditionally they're associated with the female world, but these were also worn by athletes who would wear them around a string around their waist on a string. And they would often have, so after they worked out and sweated, they would scrape off the dust and the dirt with something called a strigil, and then they would perfume themselves with what was in here. But these represent all different kinds of styles, from the animal styles similar that we saw on the picture that we began with, to this very less ornate, beautiful geometric decoration.
Coming up next, there's sort of a striking black pot.
It's a red figure, crater, which was used for holding wine. I should say that the theme of this exhibition, even though it goes through almost 10 centuries, the theme of the exhibition is the symposium. The symposium where men, and in Etruscan civilization, women as well, would gather to drink and converse. There would be, thus we have a lot of implements for serving wine, for storing wine, for drinking wine. We also have several representations of the god Bacchus, and that is who is on this thing, as the young god Bacchus, who is being served a plate of food by a satyr, a half-human, half-goat beast that we see repeated. The satyrs were part of the cortege of Dionysus in Greek mythology or Bacchus in Roman mythology. And we see that again. This is red figure, as you see, where the figures are actually in the tone of the clay beneath, and then lines are, painted on, versus the different kind of black figure where actually the figures are painted in black. Two different styles.
So this is almost like they're drawing the figure out of the clay.
Exactly.
It's they're drawing the negative space.
Exactly.
Almost like you do a woodcut.
Exactly. Precisely.
Whereas that next one looks like it was done the opposite way.
Exactly. That's why it's called a black figure painting. Where
another wine jug?
Yes. Well, actually, that's a crater, and you can see it's got two handles. It wouldn't be easy to pour from that. And then these are literally wine pitchers, single-handed vessels. And if there's one kind of vessel that dominates this exhibition, it is probably serving and pouring vessels. But here, again, you have Bacchus seen now in black figure, against the tone of the red clay, who is drawn in a chariot, a quadriga, because it is drawn by four horses, and you see the backs of those, and again accompanied by the satyr-like half-human, half-animal figures who are playing pipes and everything to celebrate the god Bacchus. But perhaps, I think, and this is the centerpiece of the exhibition,
and
what we use to advertise this exhibition, is this beautiful mosaic from the first century, Roman, we think, Probably they've suggested, just because of, I think, because of the coarseness of the mosaic, nature of the mosaic, that it was probably the frame of a large floor mosaic that shows a face. We think it's the face of Bacchus. Bacchus, who until about the 4th century BC was depicted as a mature bearded figure, but then was transformed into this young man in the prime of his life, surrounded by acanthus leaves. Because Dionysus was not only the god of wine, he was also the god of plants and vegetation. So here he's sort of surrounded by these beautiful vegetable motifs. And that, by the way, also ties Bacchus into the perfumes that would have been held in those bottles that we looked at previously, because those perfumes were made from herbs and plants, and indeed so Dionysus was kind of indirectly the god of perfumes as well.
Well, I hope your description is really whetting people's appetite to come out to Old College and see this exhibit. There's one last piece I want you to talk about, and that's this one over here.
Isn't this just lovely?
I'll describe it just briefly. It looks like a child pretending to be asleep.
Well, I think that's what it is. I think it is. I think you've got that just right. Because if we look around, some people have suggested it's a puto, which is a cupid-like figure in antiquity, sometimes with wings. But this actually appears to be a child. He wears a tunic. You walk around the sculpture, and you can see that he's the folds of his tunic, no wings or anything. So this makes me think that this might have been a child, part of a child's funerary monument, because they associate sleep with death. And it's a very sort of gentle representation of the passing of a child from this world to the other. But it is beautifully, beautifully crafted. It is beautifully preserved. I mean, just look at the gentle contours of the face and the shoulder and that suggestion of the baby flesh. It is just a miniature treasure.
What's it made from? What was it? Marble?
Marble, yeah.
And I think you're saying you're exactly right. How could they manage with that hard surface marble to make the arm and the face look puffy and soft like a child?
Exactly. And we have to think that this has probably seen better days. It's probably been abraded. Originally, it was probably quite highly polished, and that has worn away. But still, so it's not a matter of polishing. It is a matter of giving form to the marble that we're seeing now revealed. Just
even the details, like the ear.
Yep. Yeah, wow. Exactly. And there, I think, I remember back in the art, I still remember this every time I look at Greek and Roman sculpture, because I learned that the Greeks actually used a drill to sometimes create curls and hairs, really? Which the Greeks never did. And I'm wondering if that inner ear is just a little point of a drill that we see being used. What's your thought? Is that a little point there? Maybe a little drill work that's been flattened down over time? I don't know.
Well, once this exhibit is open, I'll have to come here with my glasses on and take a look. Janice Tomlinson, the director of University Museums, this has been a real treat. And Sarah Leonard, wherever you are, that was a treat looking at the other exhibit as well of Delaware Awake. I hope that many of our listeners, whether they're associated with the university or not, come out to what I hope is no longer a hidden treasure, the 4 museums here at the University of Delaware. And they are open Wednesday through Sunday.
12 to 5, Wednesday through Sunday, and Thursday evenings until 8 p.m.
Thank you, Janice.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure, Richard.
Thanks for listening to Campus Voices. The views expressed on this program are those of the individual guests and do not necessarily reflect the official views or policies of WVUD or the University of Delaware. For more information about Campus Voices and to find archive copies of this and other episodes, visit our website. Using all lowercase letters, go to www.udel.edu/campusvoices. We invite you to tune in every Thursday morning at 8:30 for Campus Voices on 91.3 FM, WVUD, and WVUD HD1, Newark, or online at wvud.org.